An on-the-scene report now from Ted Koppel, ABC at the United Nations.
At the United Nations, as probably in every other part of New York, people are asking one another the question that begins with, is it true, and ends with a helpless shrug. Most of the people have not yet heard the final word. A surprising number have not yet heard at all. For the moment, everything is continuing as normal. Groups of school children and visitors from all over the world are waiting online for their tours to begin. One woman who had heard of the president's assassination said merely, I hate to think of what it'll mean. A man said quietly, just like Lincoln, he was shot because of slavery too. At 3 o'clock, the General Assembly was scheduled to begin its session. At that time, the UN, like every other body in the world, may understand the first implications of what has really happened. This is Ted Koppel at the United Nations.
At Hyannisport, the parents of the late president had to be told of the sad news. This was the reaction at Hyannisport, as reported by Larry Newman, ABC's man on the scene. Our line to Hyannisport and the recording of Mr. Newman apparently are not available at this moment. We continue now with our sampling of reactions to the death of President Kennedy. In New Hampshire, important in political news these days, the issue of politics had faded very quickly in the light of the tragic news of the day. A report now from Arnold Schneider of ABC's election unit.
This began as a rainy, overcast New Hampshire. With the news of the shooting and death of President John F. Kennedy, the overcast has deepened into a pall of gloom over New Hampshire. From Governor John King to the citizens of New Hampshire's towns and cities, there is shock, disbelief, and grieving. The traditionally taciturn people of New Hampshire state, they lowered American flags to half-staff. Radio and television stations were swamped with phone calls after the first bulletins that the president had been shot. But now, the phones have stopped ringing. Everyone knows the president is dead. This is a time for silence, reflection, and prayer in New Hampshire. Nothing anyone had planned seems to matter. Governor King has canceled a speaking engagement scheduled for tonight. His news secretary describes the governor as very genuinely shocked, very upset. Later today, Governor King will go on television to express his grief at the assassination. Recently, Governor King held several talks with President Kennedy in Boston. He knew, respected, and liked John F. Kennedy. A Kennedy-Johnson Democratic fundraising dinner scheduled for tomorrow night in Manchester will be postponed. When this day dawned, rainy and overcast on New Hampshire, the state was getting ready for a two-day campaign visit by New York Governor Rockefeller, who had entered the state's March 10th presidential primary. Interest in the first-in-the-nation primary was building, with expectations of a bitter Rockefeller-Goldwater clash. But now, March 10th seems far, far away.
And that was Arnold Schneider in New Hampshire. Norman Thomas, many times the socialist candidate for president of the United States, had comments on President Kennedy's death today. And here is Mr. Thomas.
I feel so broken, so shocked, so ashamed of my country that it's hard to express it in words. The murder of President Kennedy is a profound blow to everything we care for. I cannot adequately express my personal grief.
And that was Norman Thomas, veteran political figure in the United States, many times socialist candidate for the presidency. Expressions of sympathy pouring in from the big names of our nation, from the little people, from the down-to-earth, from the spiritual. And now these words from Norman Vincent Peale.
We were at our magazine Guidepost in Carmel, New York, when the shocking news came that the president had been shot. We have several hundred employees here. We immediately gathered them together and had prayers for the president and for the governor of Texas. This, of course, is a great shock to all of us. It's a great blow to our country, and all of us share in this grievous loss. From the human standpoint, we all thought of this wonderful young man who, at the height of his career, young and vital and full of life, should have been struck down in such a cruel manner. Our prayers also go to Mrs. Kennedy, who has suffered within the year not only now the sudden loss of her husband, but the loss of her infant son as well. President Kennedy had made a great record. He had overcome the questionings of a certain period on the religious score. He was held in high esteem and regard by all of our people, and this is one of the greatest losses that has occurred to our country in many years. We extend our sympathy and our prayers to his family, and we pray for our country in this solemn hour of history.
On this most sorrowful day, a prayer from Norman Vincent Peale. A voice well known in the world of radio broadcasting, that of veteran commentator, reporter H.V. Kaltenborn, reached moments ago.
Here was a young man at the beginning of a great career who was launching into actions that would have affected the history of this country for many years to come. This is a sad day for the United States. And, of course, for the world, we are fortunate in that in Johnson we have a man of capability, a man of sober judgment, a man who has had long experience in government, a man who will be responsible and responsive to the demands of the people.
And that was veteran radio reporter H.V. Kaltenborn. We're going to make an attempt again to reach Larry Newman, ABC's man on the scene at Hyannisport, for a reaction of the parents of the late president today. Larry Newman, ABC, Hyannisport.
President Kennedy's mother was in touch with the hospital when her son died. She was in the family home at Hyannisport, where preparations had been underway for days for the annual gathering of the Kennedy family for Thanksgiving next Thursday. The president's ailing father is also in the Hyannisport home here, but there has been no report that he has been told of the president's death. Ann Gargan, the president's cousin, was the first to hear the news of the assassination from a family chauffeur who heard the report over a Secret Service radio. State and Barnstable police immediately sealed off the Kennedy compound, and no one has entered or left the house since the announcement of the president's death. There is only one reaction here in Hyannisport, that of tremendous shock. Small children who knew the president were in the streets with tears in their eyes crying, "The president is dead." Larry Newman, ABC, Hyannisport.
A key figure in the integration dispute and controversy during the Kennedy administration, Judge Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall in his comments.
It is just to me unbelievable, beyond comprehension, and just horrible, it's best I can know. It's just horrible that a man that stood for what he stood for and as hard as he worked solely for our country should be chopped down by somebody. To me, it's just, maybe I'll realize in a day or so.
That was the voice of Thurgood Marshall. In the city, in the nation, in the world, the grief is overbearing, the sense of loss enlarging, the finality of the news sinking in for those who would not believe their eyes and their ears. Yes, grim fact will not be denied. John F. Kennedy, in the prime of life this morning, vital, dynamic, a leader of mankind, lies dead this afternoon, and the world will long mourn his passing.
Observations from people who are thinking all over the world, all over the nation, of the horrible tragedy that has fallen upon the United States today. Washington officials have announced that President Kennedy's body will be returned from Dallas. It is now airborne, flying back to Washington, expected at Andrews Air Force Base at Washington at 6:05 this evening. The big jet on which President Kennedy so often traveled, bringing him his body back from Dallas. Aboard that plane, the new president of the United States, Lyndon Johnson, and Mrs. Kennedy. Also word from the White House that the plane carrying Press Secretary Pierre Salinger and five cabinet members, which was en route to Japan for a formal visit, has now reached Honolulu, en route back to Washington. The plane reversed its travels when informed by radio that President Kennedy was dead. A member of the ABC family has been an observer of the Washington scene for many years, a vice president now of American Broadcasting Paramount Theaters, and a former associate of President Eisenhower, and a man who knew Mr. Kennedy. Some observations on today's tragedy from James Haggerty. Jim?
Well, Don, of course, I think that the full shock of the president's death has not really become effective yet in our own country and throughout the world. Ever since the end of World War II, the United States and its president has been the leader of the free world, and the death of President Kennedy, assassinated by a rifle bullet in Dallas, is going to have profound effect throughout the world. The burdens, of course, on the new president, Lyndon Johnson, are tremendous. But I am confident that President Johnson has been kept fully informed of the affairs of the United States. He is a member of the National Security Council and worked closely with the president. Ever since 1945, when Mr. Roosevelt died, as you might remember, President Truman did not know anything about the atomic bomb until he became President of the United States and was briefed on this by the then Secretary of Defense. In the terms of President Eisenhower and the brief term of President Kennedy, this has been a thing of the past. And the two vice presidents since that time, Vice President Nixon and Vice President Johnson, have worked very closely with the president, are statutory members of the National Security Council, and as such are fully acquainted with the great affairs of the United States, particularly those in the field of foreign affairs and military strategy and defense of our country. I knew President Kennedy quite well as a senator and then as a president, and his death today is just a tremendous shock, not only to our people here, but all over the world. He is a man that was respected. Many people might have disagreed with some of the things that he was doing, but he was deeply respected, not only here, but overseas. And his assassination today was just an impossible thing that couldn't happen, but did happen.
Mr. Haggerty, while you were news secretary for years with former President Eisenhower, you knew the late president when he was then a senator. What was he like as an individual?
He's a very warm human being. He's, well, if you use the vernacular, a regular guy. I don't know anybody who knew him personally who disliked him. You just couldn't. He was a gentleman. He was a fine man, and a man that I think everybody respected, although politically or domestically some might have disagreed. But you had to respect President Kennedy, and I think the country did too.
How was he regarded when he was in the Senate by his colleagues there?
Well, as far as I know, and I did not remain in my Washington job. I wasn't in too close a touch with the members of the Senate, but from what I have heard, his colleagues and associates in the Senate speak of him, I think he was regarded very highly.
You being in the White House scene for some years, does a president live in fear of assassination?
No, I think, and the only one that I can speak of firsthand was President Eisenhower. But I'm sure that the same applied to Presidents Roosevelt, Truman, Kennedy, and every other president that we have. They are constantly protected. They get to be quite a fatalist about their own personal safety. They are quite fearless about their own personal safety. Whenever a president travels, for example, like this trip to Dallas, there is always an advance Secret Service detail that goes to the city in question that works on security measures with the local police, the sheriff's office, the state police, and a line of march is drawn up. I've been in many motorcades, particularly in large cities, while when you can protect on the streets, there's absolutely no way you can protect every building and every window. As a matter of fact, I only saw that once in the 8 years I was with President Eisenhower, and that was in Tehran, when President Eisenhower visited the Shah of Iran. But that was right after the communists had threatened to kill the Shah. And they turned out the whole army there, and every single window of every single apartment house where the motorcade passed was guarded by a soldier or a militiaman or a policeman. But that was the only time, and I have heard many people, security people, as they drive through a town with these large skyscrapers, just sort of shake their heads, particularly when the president is in an open car. There is a great deal of obvious force around the president that has that deters screwballs and crackpots. One other thing that might be of interest, with the exception of the attempt made in 1950 by the Cubans on the life of President Truman, and this attempt, the only other person that ever fired at a president that knew anything about firearms was John Wilkes Booth. Everybody else fired a gun for the first time, a pistol, at a president. Now, this was a rifle. It was from a window. The carry of the bullet from the facts and figures that I have, that bullet carried 200 yards. Now, this had to be a planned conspiracy, a deliberate planned conspiracy, and a man at the other end of that rifle with the telescopic lens that could shoot. But this is only the second time in our history, and it's only the first time in our history that a rifle has ever been used in an attempt to assassinate or to assassinate a president. So it has to be a very carefully planned conspiracy, a shocking conspiracy, but that's the way it looks to me.
You possibly answered some of the question I'm about to ask you, Mr. Hagerty, but as the former White House news secretary, the question is going to come up, why is the president permitted to ride in an open automobile? Why does he not travel in a bulletproof automobile? My second question to that will be, do you think that the Secret Service surrounding the president in his car, do you think their number are sufficient?
Well, let's take the first one first. Yes, I think their number is sufficient, augmented by local police, sheriffs, and state police. And you need to put on a strong show of force, which is what they have done. So I think that part is correct and justified. And indeed, the Secret Service haven't been reformed at the beginning of this century, or just at the end of the last century, when the American people got pretty sick and tired of having their president shot at. One out of every four presidents up till the turn of this century was shot at, in one form or another, primarily by crackpots. And since the Secret Service was formed, other presidents have been shot at. But President Kennedy, regretfully, is the only one that has been killed. President Roosevelt, there was an attempt made on his life as president-elect in Miami in 1933, 1943, I think it was. And the Puerto Ricans tried to shoot President Truman when he was staying at the Blair House. They were right on time. President Truman was 5 minutes late in leaving Blair House. If he had been on time, he'd have walked right in that ambush. But there again, the protection services, a White House guard was killed, another one was injured, and I understand from the reports today that one of the Secret Service men in Dallas has been killed.
A policeman was killed in apprehending a suspect.
It's a tough, hard job, and I have always found and worked very closely with the Secret Service that they're a dedicated bunch of men who are completely fearless, if they can, will protect the president with their own body and take the shots intended for the president if they can. But this was from a rifle from an elevated window, and in the presidential car, for example, the driver and the man sitting in the front seat is our Secret Service, and it's their sworn obligation that if anybody starts shooting, they rise up, the fellow not driving rise up and throws his body over in the back seat to protect the president.